This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Social programs that compensate for women falling behind men in order to have a strong economic and financial kind of nest egg or to be strong financially. This is what the Quran is recognizing and giving that obligation to men in their family to take care of the women of their household. Now, what some men have said is that this verse says that men have authority over women in all society, and they use that verse to say that means that women shouldn't work, that women shouldn't take public office, that women should not take any position of governance or leadership in society. And that is a huge overextension of this verse to these other situations that is denied, in fact, by the very example of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. Because when we look in his society, we see that, in fact, he appointed women to be in positions of authority, that he accepted and encouraged women to be economically strong and independent, and that he himself praised women who were putting themselves forward in the public sphere, people like Nusayba, who was a great warrior, who in fact defended the Prophet Muhammad in the Battle of Uhud with her own body and her own life. And she was highly praised by the Prophet Muhammad and by all the Khulafa after him, who allowed her to continue to fight with the Muslims in the battles. The Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, accepted Nusayba's bay'ah in the Pledge of Aqaba. So she was a representative, one of the representatives of the people of Medina. So she made that oath of allegiance, as did other women on behalf of herself, her husband, and none of the husbands of the Sahaba made the oath of allegiance for their wife. The women had to come and make the oath of allegiance themselves as individuals. But also, Nusayba was one of the women who also was a representative of the community as a whole. So we see that, unfortunately, there are men who will use the Quran, who will selectively take verses and make an overextension and use that to put women in a lesser position than men. And unless we deal with that, then unfortunately many women who don't have a lot of knowledge of the Qur'an and of Qur'an interpretation and of fiqh will be taken in by that and feel that Islam requires them to occupy a lesser position in society.
What is the meaning of hijab and its function in Islam?
Well, what the Qur'an asks for women to do is to take their khimar. The Qur'anic word is khimar. Khimar means a headscarf. This is in Surah An-Nur. Take it and to use it to cover the jiyub. A jiyub is like an opening in the neck that would allow you to pull a shirt over your head. Now, of course, we have buttons and things like that, but in that time you would just simply have an opening in the neck. So what the Quran asks is for the believing women to take their head coverings and to, you know, cover the neck and the chest area. Also, the Quran asks Muslim women to take their jalabib, their outer garment, and to wear it in a way so that they will be known as Muslim women. So what does that mean? That means that taken together, the Quran and the Sunnah of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, says that there should be a way for Muslim women to identify themselves in public as Muslim women, and that this dress should include a head covering a modest covering of the body. Now, some people think that there are certain specific garments that should be worn. But scholars and the practice of Muslims throughout, you know, history has been that that as long as a woman wears clothes that functionally provide this kind of identification and covering, that that is sufficient, that she's fulfilling the purpose. Unfortunately, there are many people who don't read the Quran, so they say things like, the Quran requires only women to dress modestly. I'm not sure what verse they're referring to, and I would like to ask those women or those men, you know, what verse in the Quran are they talking about? The Quran, in fact, does require a specific kind of cover, but it also requires men to do something as well. And in fact, in Surah An-Nur, men are asked, even before women, to lower their gaze. So this is a reciprocal obligation. This is an obligation of men to be respectful of women, to not leer at women, to not sit by the roadside and stare at women, not sit in coffee shops and make women uncomfortable while they're walking back and forth. In fact, there's a hadith where the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, explicitly said and ordered men not to sit by the roadsides because it would make those passerbys uncomfortable. But if you have to sit by the road, then give those who are passing by their rights. Unfortunately, the culture in many Muslim societies now is that men are lining the roadsides, lining the roads and cafes and others, staring at whoever walks by. So it's very important that men also fulfill their obligation, and that if they are sitting, you know, outside, that they should not be staring at the women who are passing by, no matter how they're dressed. That's their obligation. So this is a reciprocal obligation, it's a mutual obligation to have a wholesome society, to have a society in which men and women can work together, can interact together in a way that is chaste, that is conducive to supporting families that are functioning well. That is the whole purpose of the hijab.
As a Muslim American, what responsibility do you feel you have in building bridges of understanding and peace among cultures and religions?
You know, there's so many misunderstandings about Muslims and about Islam in American society. And that's something that I spend a lot of time doing, is to try to correct those misunderstandings. But it's not just a question of ideas. It's also incumbent upon the Muslim American community to show in their actions that they're part of this society, that we care about our neighbors, no matter what their religion, whether they are people of faith or no faith. We have obligations to contribute to the welfare of this society. We have obligations to all children, whether they're the children of Muslim families or not. We cannot simply withdraw our children into Muslim enclaves, Muslim schools, and forget about all of the children who are in public schools and getting poor education. If we choose to put our children in Islamic schools, then we also have to make sure that with our voting and with the policies that we support, that those children who are in public schools have an excellent education, that they have health care, that they are in an environment that is healthy for them. Because our children are our first obligation, but they're not our last obligation. So Muslims have to demonstrate with their actions that they care about all people. At the same time, Muslim Americans have a responsibility to try to convey to our Muslim brothers and sisters in other parts of the world that America is much more complicated than they think it is. And it's painful for American Muslims who are part of this society to have this sense that there are some Muslims in other parts of the world that would like to see this country harmed. We agree. I think all American Muslims would agree that there have been terrible tragedies, and there have been policies that have been harmful, not just to Muslims, but to other people, to other vulnerable people in the world. But this is our country, and we're working to improve it, and we're working with those of other faiths to improve this.